Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by cape-wearing armadillos. Instead, it's brought to you by Stitcher Premium. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Thinking Sideways is on Stitcher Premium, so if you're tired of waiting for Thursdays and you want to make Sunday slash Monday your day for the mystery, well, you can get a hold of us on Stitcher Premium. You get the episodes early, like I said. There's no ads in the episode. And by the way, there's some extra bonus content thrown out once a month. Joe is silently throwing his arms in the air and screaming, yay, he is pulling his hair out. Joe, you need to stop. That looks like it's painful. If you go to Stitcher.com/thinkingsideways and you use the promo code Sideways, you'll get 1 month free when you sign up for the 12-month plan. So go there. Good deal to be had. It's a great time. This episode is also brought to you by the audiobook edition of The Wife Between Us by Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen. Hear the story listeners are calling WOW, just W-O-W, and one of the best audiobooks ever, E-V-E-R. Narrated by Julia Whalen, this twisty psychological suspense about a jealous wife is not what you think. I know we all know jealous wives. This one's not it. Start listening now at macmillanaudio.com/wifebetweenus. That's Macmillan, M-A-C-M-I-L-L-A-N, audio.com/wifebetweenus.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I'm Devin, joined as always by
Joe
and
Steve.
Today we're going to talk about a mystery.
Woot!
Yeah.
It's a disappearance.
Oh, really?
One yeah. Of them, huh? It was suggested by everyone.
Yeah, this is a popular one.
Yeah,
very
including
popular one.
Sarah, Jean, Julian, and Stephanie. They were the first four.
And some others.
Yeah, yeah, lots of others. And if you don't check the names of the episodes before you start listening to them, now I get to tell you. We are going to talk about the disappearance of Brian Schaefer today.
Who? Brian Schaefer? Who's that?
He's a guy who disappeared weirdly.
Oh, really? Like out of a bar or something?
This, I know, is a pet case for a lot of people in general. So here's my typical, we're probably going to leave some of your favorite details out.
Because there's a lot of rabbit holes.
Disclaimer, exactly. But we don't really need a little ears disclaimer.
No.
Which is great. This
This is a weird case.
Yeah, it's just, it's really weird. I would say...
Endless speculation, I have to say, too, on the internet about
it. Oh, yeah, tons of it. It's kind of, I would say it's akin almost to the Mara Murray case, and that realistically, as far as confirmed details that we absolutely positively know, there's not that much there.
About 4 pages of details and about 70 million pages of conjecture.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think even 4 pages of details. I think I think one page of details.
I was including the videotapes, frames.
Oh, okay. Yeah, frame by frame. Yeah.
But basically, the overview of this case is a guy walks into a bar and disappears forever.
Huh. That is the worst joke ever.
Yeah.
No punchline.
It's bad.
Guy walks into a bar. Bartender says, "What is this, a joke?"
Ha.
Get it.
Okay. So let's start at the top.
Okay.
Brian Schaefer was 27 when he disappeared, and he was a medical student at the University of Ohio. It was his second year, and he had 2 more years until he would become a doctor, so he was halfway through.
No, 2 more years until he starts the suffering process of being a resident and everything else.
Well,
and then
okay,
you get to be a doctor.
Technically, yeah. True, but
you
two more years.
All kinds of hoops before you get to be a doctor.
2 more years of medical school.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had been in school the entire time. He did the high school, the undergrad in microbiology, and then on to the grad program he was in.
So he wasn't one of those guys who took a break at some point, is what you're getting at. Yeah.
And it took him a little longer to do his undergrad than 4 years.
That was like 6 years or something.
Which is okay. Especially something like microbiology.
That's not easy.
As long as it didn't stop him from getting into med school, then no biggie.
Yeah. By all accounts, he was a very smart, very nice guy. He was apparently a talented musician as well, often maybe joking, but kind of seriously not joking. You know the joke, where people, you know, reveal their deepest, darkest wishes by quote-unquote joking around about
it. I want to be a famous podcaster.
Yeah.
You know, that one.
Yeah, that one.
What a lame dream that is.
Yeah. That dream does not work out well.
It does not. Anyway, his go-to joke was that the doctor thing was just until his musical career took off.
Well, smart to actually plan a second career just in case that didn't happen.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to be Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
And there's already one Jimmy Buffett. He would have to murder the other Jimmy Buffett.
Well, and he was really into Pearl Jam.
Well, you want to actually hear a funny, weird bit of factoid about Jimmy Buffett?
Okay.
Yeah, what's that?
Okay, so you know there's the whole Margaritaville lifestyle that Jimmy Buffett has been selling for years?
He's not that way at all.
He doesn't live that lifestyle. Yeah.
He's awful.
From the very beginning, he said, "I'm going to sell people this lifestyle," and they have been paying him for it for decades.
But how does he actually live? Is he like a non-drinking guy who lives in New Jersey or something like that?
Yeah, he's your normal runabout guy who doesn't drink much. He's not into the beach lifestyle. He's like, "No, I sing music and people buy my stuff and I live well off of it."
It makes sense. Smart. The guy is a smart businessman, I think.
So Brian Schaefer.
Oh yeah, back to our topic.
Like I said, he was also into Pearl Jam. He had a Pearl Jam tattoo on him.
I saw a picture of that.
Like the stick man or whatever. Yeah. Giving the peace sign or something like that. Or big hug or something. He had a good relationship with his family, which was his mother, Renee, his father, Randy, and his younger brother, Derek. Unfortunately, Renee lost a long battle with a particularly bad type of cancer called...
It's bone cancer. It's way easier just to say bone cancer.
It's bone marrow cancer.
Yes.
It's not even...
Myelodysplastic syndrome.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of something that's kind of similar to, whatchamacallit. That's it.
I had the word
balancing on the tip of my fulcrum of my brain. It's like a bone marrow thing.
It is, basically...
It inhibits the formation of...
blood cells?
Of red blood cells, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was a long, kind of painful battle for her. She did, unfortunately, lose that battle in March of 2006. Her passing was hard on the whole family, but those close to Brian said that he at least outwardly was taking it really well, but they suspected that he was not taking it as well as
it seemed like he was taking it.
Yeah,
that's understandable. You know, I got to tell you that I haven't been through a couple of those long, lingering illness things myself with my parents.
Yep.
That by the time it's all over, you know, you've actually done a lot of all the grief is really kind of behind you already, you know, so you're kind of just ready to start living your life again.
Exactly. Yeah. But also, you know, missing your parents.
No, it still sucks, but I mean, it's still, definitely. it's not a real shock to the system. Like if they suddenly get killed in a wreck or something like that.
It's not unexpected.
Not at all.
Yeah. And you've had your time to say goodbye and all that stuff.
At
Ohio State University, in 2006, spring break started on March 31st, a Friday that year. Every year, usually spring break starts on a Friday.
Except for that one year where it was really lame and it started on Wednesday.
Yeah. I don't know. That'd be kind of nice. Spring break ever. I feel like that'd be kind of nice. But it'd have to go all the way to the next Friday. It'd be lame if it was literally
no. Just 2 days.
It was still a week, but it went from Wednesday to Tuesday.
Oh, got it. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Back to our case. It started on Friday, the March 31st, which of 2006.
Which is April Fool's Eve.
Which is April Fool's Eve, but also the same month that Renee, Brian's mom, had passed away.
Right.
I don't have a date necessarily for that.
I heard it was 3 weeks before this particular
occurrence. Yeah, it was in the first week of the month when she passed.
Right, but I don't have like a specific
date,
which is fine, I think. But recently, Brian had planned to go to Florida, Miami specifically, with his girlfriend Alexis for the bulk of spring break, where he was reportedly planning to propose to her.
Are we going to talk about that part later on, I assume?
What, Florida?
No, the whole plan to propose bit.
What about it?
Well, so I see this everywhere, and it really sticks in my craw because she's the one who seems to say it. Was a ring ever found in his stuff? Like,
I don't believe it was.
His brother's the one who brought it up first.
Okay, but was a ring ever found among his possessions is what I want to know.
I have heard not. They had not bought a ring.
Which makes that me doesn't, think...
I mean, I'll just say, yes, okay, traditionally he would have a ring and blah, 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 but... I'm not bothered by that.
The bubblegum machine and get the plastic toy ring, but
or
it just
no
seems
ring
that if
at all.
Planning ahead, it should have been somewhere.
Maybe.
He was a last minute kind of guy.
He was going to do it without a ring, which is also fine because from what I have heard or talked to a number of people I know, they say, I don't want to buy a ring because I know she's going to want to help pick it out.
No, it's a good
so
point.
He says, okay, we'll go pick out a ring. I'm going to buy it for you. You'll have the perfect ring, and I don't trust myself, blah, 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 whatever.
How do you get the placeholder?
Yeah, or, you know, just know your fiancé well enough
or
to
maybe
buy.
Had it all planned out to wander into a jewelry store in Florida and then just, like, say, oh, you like that ring? Okay, I'll buy it. And then you get on your knees and say, oh, will you marry me? And then she says, no.
Yeah.
And then you say, great, I can return this, right?
Or you don't even buy it yet.
Yeah.
You do it before you buy it.
The ideal, but then that makes the rest of the vacation a little bit uncomfortable, of course. But at least you saved a lot of bucks by not buying the jewelry.
Yeah. Well, so regardless of the ring.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We
that's okay. I hear what you're saying. But the first time I saw it said was from his brother. And it's my understanding that he had talked a little bit about it when he was out to dinner with his father on the 31st as well.
Okay.
But yes, I agree. And also it was a little weird to me because they'd only been together for a year.
Yeah,
but, you know, 27.
That part doesn't bother me. It's the lack of the ring. And
that bothers you? Okay, sure.
Yeah. The no evidence of the actual intention to make it happen is what bugs me.
Well, neither one bothers me at all.
I guess, I was going to say, either way, it doesn't really matter because they'd planned to go to Miami for a week together. Okay. They were in a serious, committed relationship to each other. That's really all I guess we really need to know about it. Anyhow, Brian's father, Randy, came into town to visit and celebrate spring break with Brian. Is always how you will see it reported, that they were there to celebrate spring break. I really think Randy was just thinking, you know what? My wife just died. I really care about my son and I, you know, care about both of my children. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I want to see him. And this is a great excuse.
And maybe he wanted to see how he was doing.
Yeah. You know? See how he's doing, spend some quality time with him, knowing he was going to leave for a whole week, you know, just a couple weeks after his wife and Brian's mom had passed away. You know,
yeah,
just
it's
kind
a
of,
check.
Yeah, I think it's a check. It's a check and also just a, you know, nice time to see him. So they went out to dinner that night or that evening, I guess, to a steakhouse. It's not really clear what time it was, but I do think it was like evening time, like, you know, 5-6 o'clock at night. Randy said that it seemed like Brian was tired.
Finals will do that to you.
Yeah. It sounded like he had been pulling a lot of all nighters for exams that were coming up.
I could never do that.
It's not a great idea. You know?
I was really good at the all-nighters. It was the staying up for the exam the next day that was really hard for me.
It's easy to stay up all night, but then actually being able to actually think coherently during the exam, that's kind
of
tough.
And here's the pro tip for all of you listeners who are still in school. It actually is like scientifically proven better for you to sleep because your brain will actually retain the information.
Yeah.
So go to sleep. Oh, yeah. Stop listening to us. Go to sleep.
Yeah, no all-nighters.
Wake up for your finals tomorrow. You're going to be fine.
I had a cool hallucination and final exam one time from pulling an all-nighter. But that's a whole other
story. I was going to say, we can talk about that later.
Yeah. We'll talk about that at CrimeCon.
Yeah. Randy said in interviews after Brian disappeared that he remembered feeling like he didn't think Brian should go out with his friends as he had planned later that night because he seemed so tired. But he didn't say anything because, you know, Brian's an adult.
Yeah,
which I think is fair.
Totally. That's it. But, you know, when you get out there to the bar, you know, the loud music and the booze is a big energizer for me. I don't know about you guys, but yeah.
Yeah, it
can be. Yeah.
It's an energizer.
At the beginning, yeah. And, you know, usually at that age, 3 years ago,
you, lady,
you have some coffee or, you know, an energy drink or something like that sometimes to help you out a little
bit. Yeah, probably was drinking Red Bulls or something.
Yeah. So Brian goes out. The main friend that he's with is named William Florence, but this guy's nickname is Clint, so we're going to call him Clint. Brian met Clint at the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
A nice name, huh?
I'm going to call it that the full name every single time.
Yeah.
Ugly owners.
Yeah. They,
I think
beautiful fish.
I think it's tuna phobic. I don't think we should use it.
Well, they met at 9 p.m. that night and then started bar hopping down kind of a main drag street.
Yeah, it's a college town, right?
Yeah.
So there's lots of bars.
Clint says that at each bar they took a shot, then moved on. At about 10 p.m., Alexa says Brian called her because she was visiting her family. About a couple hours away before
they... Toledo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is like a 2.5 hour drive from Columbus, where they were. Or like outside of wherever or Ohio State University is. I think actually in the beginning of this, I said it was University of Idaho or of Ohio.
Wow, you are just putting every state school in
that
the
mix. That and a thousand here, man. It's good. Anyways, it was actually OSU. So sorry for that earlier. Anyway, Alexa says that about 10 p.m., Brian called her because she, like we said, she was visiting her family just to say that he loved her and, you know, was he was out and, you know, he would see her.
Yeah, it was like an hour into the night, I think, is where I've seen it. So he must have started drinking around 9 o'clock.
They were, they do. They have that timestamp. Clint said they met at 9 p.m.
Right.
And then they started bar hopping. And, you know, I suspect she was probably thinking, like, I'm going to go to bed soon. And he called her to say goodnight and he loved her and he was going to be out.
And after a drink or two, you're totally
real lovey.
Hey, babe, love you.
Yeah.
Well, he
love
was probably
so
four or five. Like, hey, babe.
He was probably, I'm figuring he probably had about 12 shots under his belt by this time. That was a whole hour. So,
I don't think 12 probably, but.
No, but.
Anyway,
okay, that's ambitious,
an unspecified time after midnight. I think it's close after midnight, but it is never actually specified. Clint and Brian run into one of Clint's friends named Meredith Reed, who then gave them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Meredith is a guy, correct? I believe, because I mean, Meredith is one of those names that can be a male or female, and I'm pretty sure it was a guy and not a girl, but
I always thought it was a girl. Yeah.
Well, see, I initially was like, oh, it must be a lady, but then a bunch of stuff that I read gave me the impression that it was all the guys going to the last bar.
Really?
This is very odd. Here's what I'll tell you is I watched the crap out of the surveillance
and
tapes.
And you can't tell.
Well, and I can't... Well, the surveillance tapes are really good, but Brian is standing in front of Meredith.
Right.
And walking, and so you can't actually tell. So I...
How tall is Meredith, do you think?
Well, I don't know. That they are standing on the step below Brian.
Uh-huh.
And Brian was 6'2", so I don't know. Not taller than 6'2", plus 5 inches.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I...
Not sure.
I'm not sure.
Okay. I believe it's a guy, but again, that's... I'm not 100% positive because there's so much weird reporting on this one.
Wow. Yeah, and that's the other thing is I've never seen it. I don't think I've ever seen it specified. I'm like racking my brain.
Okay.
So I'm really sorry, everyone. I'm going to admit there's a lack in my research.
Sorry for causing the brain spasm.
Yeah, but
I actually think it probably is a female type person just simply because I have an eye for this sort of thing. Like if like say on the Wikipedia page, Meredith would have been referred to at some point as him or he or something like that.
And
no,
yet, and
Meredith
that would have jarred
it never,
my brain.
To it
in
never
any
is.
Way on the page.
Never
that's
is.
The problem.
It's either
all
either Reed,
reporting.
Uh-huh.
as in the last name, or they,
well,
as in the he and, or she, the, that person and Clint.
It's okay. It's always very gender non-specific is what's bungling all of this.
We're gonna make Meredith into a girl here, I think.
I think we're just going to just call Meredith and Clint.
We're going to let Meredith stay gender non-specific the way Meredith likes it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Anyway, Meredith gave them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna, where they all planned to end their night, then go home. Brian reportedly got separated from Meredith and Clint at this spot. The bar closes at 2 a.m.
Normal, yeah.
Which is normal. So Clint and Meredith figured they'd wait outside the only exit from the bar, and they'd find Brian in the crowd exiting. When they didn't see him, they assumed that when they'd been separated from the bar, Brian had just left without telling them. You know, he couldn't find them or whatever.
Hmm.
The next morning, Alexis tried calling Brian but couldn't get a hold of him. His phone went
That's Alexis, his girlfriend. Yeah.
She said his phone went straight to voicemail. She just assumed he was, you know, sleeping it off, and so she tried it again later.
Yeah.
Finally, on Sunday, when she still couldn't get a hold of him, his phone was still going straight to voicemail, she called Randy, Brian's father, to see if he had heard from him, and he hadn't, so they then called the police. Reporting varies on this. According to Alexis, on some news reports that I watched, they reported Brian missing Sunday. Wikipedia says that Brian was reported missing on Monday after he missed the flight to Miami.
Hmm.
I don't know which is true.
Hmm.
I would tend to believe Sunday.
I know, it was at least a day or two.
But it was a couple days at least.
It took a couple of days.
Yeah, because Friday night was the night that...
And this is something, this is not outrageous, but I think it's a little odd that Clint didn't call him the next morning and just say, hey, what the hell, dude, where were you? Just to see that he's all right. You know?
Well, I don't know that he didn't. Clint is like, after that night, Clint is
just disappeared.
He won't say anything.
I think Clint just tried to protect himself from the court of mass negative appeal.
It doesn't necessarily mean he's guilty of anything. No.
Yeah.
But, no.
Either
way, Columbus police did get the missing persons report, and they acted, and totally reasonably. First, they checked with local hospitals and homeless shelters to make sure he hadn't shown up any of those places like you would expect them to. That would be, you know, the first place you would expect them to check.
Right, because people don't understand why the cops do that. Because if somebody gets, let's say, whacked on the head and gets a concussion, they can be in a weird state. Remember, there's that, for us in real time, the report of the guy who was on the East Coast, went skiing, took a tumble, and they found him a week later in California in the same clothes with no memory of how he got there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why. But people are like, why'd they check those places? That's why.
Well, the hospitals, just because, I mean, he could be unconscious in a hospital, but a homeless shelter, you know, anywhere that somebody could be warm and get services, pretty much they're going to check because for whatever reason, that's where they're going to go.
Yeah.
From there, well, so obviously Brian was not found either of those or any of those places. So then from there, the investigator is starting to put together a timeline, basically the timeline we just talked about a minute ago of what Brian had been doing. The only additional detail that Clint and Meredith were able to provide is that they thought they'd seen Brian chatting with the band.
Yeah, and I thought that I read in one place, again, you read in all kinds of different accounts, but he had said to them, that, hey, I'm going to go talk to the band, you know, and that's the last word they heard from him, is he said he was actually going to go chat with them.
I don't know how much.
Being a musician, I'm not surprised. I heard that this was late, and they had actually stopped playing, and they were starting to break down.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe he just wanted to go talk about guitars for a little bit.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, I don't know if they... if, you know, Brian said that to them or they just saw him over there or what, but it does seem that Brian was chatting with the band at least at one point.
Mm-hmm.
When interviewed, the staff at the Ugly Tuna Saluna were totally unable or unwilling to provide any helpful information, though it seems they were reasonably cooperative.
It was a bar full of people. How are you going to
on the first night of spring break?
Yeah, I'm sure it was a zoo in there. So.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same thought when I saw the footage with the security guards. Like, those security guards here. No, they just saw a billion people come screaming through.
Yeah, and realistically, like, Brian isn't an insanely...
He's not really unique looking.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good looking guy.
He didn't have a horn growing out of the middle of his head, so he stood out in the crowd.
Yeah, 6'2", you know, reasonably built white dude with brown hair. I mean,
Yeah.
Unless you're paying attention, like really paying attention and looking for him. Mm, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of actually, you know, you look at Brian, you think, that's he's really all-American looking.
He is the all-American boy.
He is.
But here's what I'll say is that in Ohio, there's a lot of all-American
boys.
Oh,
are there really?
Yeah. 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 The police started searching the area around the Ugly Tuna Saluna. They checked all the dumpsters in this kind of back alleyway. They were hoping to find any kind of clues. There were no clues whatsoever. They searched the rivers and the entire campus of Ohio State University with search dogs and didn't find anything.
So I have two questions.
Yeah.
I've not seen this. One, do we know what day garbage day was for those dumpsters? We don't. Okay. I've never seen it reported, but that's why I'm asking.
And nobody seems to know that one. There's a lot of people who theorize he wound up in a dumpster and wound up going to the dump.
That happens, sadly, to a lot of people. But my other question is, because we get just basted about this, what kind of search dogs did they use?
Yeah, like cadaver dogs versus sniffer dogs.
Right.
Versus,
it was tracker dogs.
Yeah.
We know that for sure? Fairly certainly?
I would say, yeah, within a reasonable...
Okay. I when I was looking, mm-hmm. I could never figure it out, and
the reason that I presume that is because they also, I was going to save this for a little later, but they also searched, they had the dogs come in and sniff around the bar to see if they could track Brian from the bar, and they were unable to do that.
Because they got sidetracked by the jerky martinis?
Probably, yeah. But I presume they used the right kind of dogs.
Okay.
Although
I would assume so as well. But...
I had heard some rumor later, though, that they came back later. There was a construction site right next door, and one of the theories is he fell into a big
hole. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
But they came back with cadaver dogs and supposedly got a hit there.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
But again, you hear a lot
of
stuff.
Yeah, that's, I
super
heard that,
popular
but...
case.
Yeah, so they didn't find anything. Then the police decided, well, there is some surveillance footage,
all over town.
Well, and also specifically in the Ugly Tuna Saluna entryway. Therefore, I guess we can, sit an investigator in here and to review the, 12 hours of video surveillance footage to see if they can see anything worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So we'll pause here because I don't think that we've described how the Ugly Tuna Saloon is set up.
This is really important.
It is actually very important.
This case was dumb to me until I figured out how the Ugly Tuna Saloon was organized.
Yeah, it is really, really important. And the reason that I say this is because eventually the investigators were able to even see where Brian, Clint, and Meredith had parked, how they walked from the parked car, like even to the point of which of the support beams they walked past, up through a little corridor area.
Fully track their movements.
They could track them all the way into the Ugly Tuna Saluna, but there were no surveillance cameras in the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Yeah,
so
they actually did touch the street. It's not like they parked in a parking garage and came through the back door into the mall and into the bar, right?
They didn't touch a street. So there's a...
They came through the mall area then?
Well, I guess you'd call it a mall area, but it's like an open...
Do we just want to start explaining how this whole place is set up? Because that might be the ease to lay the groundwork and then
that's probably the easiest way. Yeah. So it is kind of a mall area in that like a square area.
Yeah, it's not like private, closed off to the public, but it's pedestrian only.
But it's open air.
Yeah, but it's open air. It's between High Street, which is like on one side, mm-hmm. and then there's another sort of alley behind there, and there's like a block long thing, which is kind of mall-like with a lot
open
of bars.
Open plaza-ish.
Yeah, like a plaza.
And restaurants.
It's wider than a street would be.
Yeah, pedestrian only.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
It is.
You can go to it on Street View. It's got all kinds of cool stuff, shops and stuff.
Yeah. So the Ugly Tuna Saluna is on the second floor of one of these buildings.
Yeah.
And this is very important because it means there's just one way in and one way out. And that way was under surveillance.
Yeah.
There's a set of stairs and an escalator that goes up and an escalator that goes down.
And that is all fully covered
and
by
it's
the eye
fully
of the
covered by one not moving eye of a camera. You can see everybody who walks up and down the stairs. You can see everybody who comes up and down the escalators. And unlike most surveillance cameras, this one's pretty HD.
Pretty high tech, yeah.
You can definitely... I mean, I was watching... The way that I got to see the surveillance footage was from somebody pointing a camera at their TV.
Yeah.
At, whatever the NBC Dateline, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head. And I could still look very clearly identify the person as Brian Schaefer that, you could see kind of being tracked on this. No red circles or anything like that. So if it was good enough through the like five steps of somebody filming their TV with something and then uploading it onto YouTube, definitely.
Yeah, I think most of us are used to the security cameras that take
like an ATM or something.
2 or 3 second stills, you know, after 2 or 3. No, this thing was shooting continuous video.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a back emergency exit on the first floor. I'm not totally clear how one accesses that emergency exit, but I will say that that emergency exit, I believe, is rigged to alarm when opened, which sometimes malfunctions, or they might have turned it off because it might have also served as like a loading dock.
Like the way for the band to get in and out?
It's possible. It's unclear, but possible. And there is a motion sensor camera back there as well that turns on anytime there's any motion back there. And then it's reportedly zooms in a, like kind of where a reasonable range of a head would be so you can see a face of whoever is coming out. Because, you know, you're not supposed to use those exits but for emergencies.
So they want to know. But right. I had heard also there was an employee exit like on the south side of the bar.
That is, it's my understanding that is the employee exit.
Yeah.
That goes to that emergency exit down there.
So it's like stairs that go to the emergency exit on the ground floor. Okay.
Right, but I don't really know how. I don't know if it's like you have to go through, you know, the kitchen and the bar and like 3 other rooms to get to that staircase, or if it's just through some curtains that say emergency exit. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, this is the difficulty is they haven't published a floor plan.
It would be nice to have one.
Yeah,
of those.
That would be great. Google, would you get on that?
Yeah, really.
Mapping the bottom of the ocean, but they won't map the inside of a bar.
I know.
Well, it's kind of like the bottom of the ocean. It's the Ugly Tuna Saloon.
Good point.
Also, as Joe kind of briefly mentioned before, at the time of Brian's disappearance, there was also a number of construction exits in that building as well. So you come up, you know, to the Ugly Tuna Saloon.
Second floor.
On the second floor. And, you know, there's kind of like an entryway area. It's not just like straight to the doors. There's a little bit of a...
That's an open atrium kind of area.
A little bit. It's not huge.
There's like a theater off to your left, right? And then there's like a hallway ahead of you, I think.
I don't think the theater's on that one. No, I don't think so.
Theater on the first floor?
I think.
Yeah. You know, all I've seen is somebody posted a video, and it's another one. The feds, if Congress wants to do one useful thing, they can ban portrait videos. So somebody doing the whole freaking holding my iPhone up, doing a portrait video, going up the, riding up the escalator to the top at the Ugly Tuna.
Yeah.
Well, so you can see what it looks like. The bar's off to the right, straight ahead. There's a short, wide hallway, you know, that maybe goes to bathrooms or storerooms or God knows what. And there's something off to the left. You can't really tell. It looks kind of mall-like.
So from the camera angles, from the surveillance camera angle, the escalator comes right up. There's like a wall that it comes up. And it goes straight into the Ugly Tuna Saloon, basically. There's like a little, I don't know what to really call it. I guess atrium is a fine thing. And then, so the camera's looking down towards the outside.
The security camera.
So the escalators are coming up on the, what would be the right side, but is on this, the left side. Mm. And then the stairs are on, like, right next to it, to the right. And then the construction area is further to the right.
Yeah.
So it'd be to the left.
So I think what Joe was describing.
But it may be that it was post construction.
Right. I think you guys might be talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I'm not really clear on what kind of construction they're talking about, because like when this is kind of a mall, and in a mall there's, you know, the original construction where you pour concrete and everything and put on a roof, and then there's always when some tenant leaves and you rip out the walls and you reconstruct the whole thing. You've seen that going on in malls, right?
Yeah.
So is that the kind of construction we're talking about?
I'm not clear.
A serious, heavy-duty, pouring concrete slabs kind of...
Not clear.
Yeah.
Unclear.
Okay.
But through this construction site, which I understand was kind of hard to navigate even in the light and, you know, had lots of construction-y hazards.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, whoever it was, Dateline or whoever it was, showed some footage of the quote-unquote construction-y area, and it almost looked like a back section. You know how you see where there's all the pipes for like malls, all of the plumbing runs through one area?
Yeah, but I wasn't clear if that was...
I was going to say, I don't know if that's actually that site or not, but it really gave me the impression that it was more of they were doing construction on that internal plumbing stuff and not a tenant's location like you were talking about, John.
Okay.
But regardless, it's the only way in or out of this whole area is through that one camera surveillance thing. Or through the construction zone at the time that Brian Schaefer went missing.
Probably that's because they'd torn out a wall and had built a new wall.
But it was full construction zone, you know, plywooded off with like a door into it and then tons of hazards.
Somewhere you don't want a drunk to go wandering, basically.
Exactly, yeah. And one that you would presume would be locked at night when it's like nobody needs access to it. But
you would think so.
Maybe
somebody had a key.
Yeah.
So the guys arrive back at the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Yep, at midnight. Back to the tracking thing. They arrive back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna at about 1:15 a.m.
Okay.
According to the surveillance camera footage that I was watching.
The timestamp on it.
And the reporting, though, I guess they were bar hopping with Meredith a little bit before they came back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Or they drank with Meredith wherever. Yeah.
Right. That's what I mean. And then about 40 minutes later, Brian is seen on the same surveillance camera at the top of that stairs escalator area. Like I said, the quality is really good. You can see it's definitely Brian there.
He looks a little intoxicated in his movements.
He does, but he doesn't look like sloppy drunk.
But he
does not look sober.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's been drinking for 4 hours.
Yeah. He's definitely been drinking for 4 hours.
Yeah.
But
he's
not like, you know, falling all over himself. He's still able to walk and
He's able to hit on the ladies, and
apparently not be so drunk, because there are also two security guards standing at the top of the stairs. He's not so drunk that they felt like they needed to intervene.
Yeah, I noticed that in this video I was just telling you about. You go up there and there's a security guard standing right there. It's like, what a great job that must be. But they got him right there. Yeah. Is that so they can see the drunks coming right up the escalator and just intercept them before
they
get to the bar and turn them around and shove them right back down the downstairs?
I have no idea. Yeah. I really don't. But yeah, there were two security guards up there. And then there are two young women that he can be seen talking to. And there's a group of guys as well, kind of off to the side.
Some people milling about.
Yeah. And some people say, oh, these guys followed him in and beat him up. But they seem to be standing there. They don't seem to be making movement to follow him or anything.
Acknowledge his existence.
Yeah. But he does, he talks to these two young ladies for a minute and then he walks back into the bar. And that's the absolute last time that anybody has ever been able to say they've seen Brian Schaefer.
Officially.
Well, not officially. It's the last time that anybody's ever come forward and said they saw Brian Schaefer.
Well, officially as in on tape, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, yeah. I mean, but nobody's ever even claimed to really see him after that. I mean, that's the last time that anybody's ever said anything about Brian Schaefer existing in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So that was at
1:55 a.m.
But okay. this would be before he went to talk to the band, right?
I don't know. That's unclear.
Okay.
The band conversation could have happened before he wandered outside.
Yeah. So it was my impression that Meredith and Clint lost track of Brian pretty quickly after they got back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna. So, you know, probably like 1:30-ish would be my guess. I don't know. Just guessing, just throwing out numbers here. And then he could have gone out, or it could have been then, but the bar closed. They left the bar. They actually got their seen going back to their car at 2:07. So that's a pretty quick time for them to be like, oh, we lost track of him. Okay, we'll see him coming out. And then wait 5 minutes and then say, oh, okay, whatever. He just went home.
Yeah, it's you're right.
Drunk impatience.
I guess, but I
they didn't go inside the bar or check the bathrooms or anything like that?
No. So that's why I think they lost track of him much earlier in the night, because it makes way more sense, even in a drunk brain, for them to say, we haven't seen him in a half hour. He probably just went home. He was tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus we saw him five minutes ago.
Yeah.
Whoa, I wonder where he went. He just must have gone home. It's fine. You know, that's my two cents.
Still, man, I heard that in 2006, that was kind of a bad neighborhood, and they really probably shouldn't. They should have checked a little more thoroughly.
Probably, but, you know, they were also drinking, and they were...
They were drunk, and they were young and irresponsible. I get it, yeah.
So, yeah, that's everything we know for sure about Brian Schaefer.
Well, okay, then.
So, we're going to talk about theories, but first we're going to take a break.
Hello and welcome to Spontaneous Poetry Night here at Thinking Sideways Studios. Up first is the master of terrible and amazing, or amazingly terrible, puns, me. Skyscrapers are tall, embankments are small. There is only one true ring to rule them all. Wait, that's wrong. Sorry, hang on, let me start again. 1,000 bad guys' bullets fly, but none of them hit our good guy. A hero's bullets barrel forth. Many enemies end up with their heads facing north. No, that's not right. All right, here we go. Thor's hammer is huge, and so is that dude. Wait, that... I don't even know where the hell that came from. Let's try this one more time, because I think I've got it. The feds may have known what trouble was brewing and stewing, but unfortunately, they did not know what they were doing. Ha! I nailed it! What the heck does that have to do with anything? Well, that has to do with the new show coming out on Hulu, The Looming Tower. The Looming Tower is based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning book by Lawrence Wright, and this limited series traces the rising threat of Osama bin Laden and how the rivalry between the FBI and the CIA may have set a path for the events of 9/11. Starring Emmy winner Jeff Daniels, Golden Globe nominee Peter Sarsgaard, and Tahir Rahim as Ali Sufan, The Looming Tower is available only on Hulu, so go there and check it out.
And we're back. Our first theory,
yep,
is aliens abducted him.
Okay, I can get behind this. Flesh this out for me.
It's unlikely.
Okay. You're just jerking my chain.
You don't think so?
As soon as I get on the alien bandwagon, she jerks the rug out from underneath me.
Well, if you look at pictures of the Ugly Tuna Saloon, the building it's in, it actually looks kind of like a spaceport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so I mean...
I could totally see a little mix-up with the aliens there.
Yeah. Honestly, though, for all we know, somehow, without anybody else noticing, Brian Schaefer was abducted by aliens from the Ugly Tuna Saloon after 8:55 a.m. the night of March. Well, I guess by that time, April 1st, 2006.
8:50? You mean 1:55 a.m.?
Yeah, what did I say?
8:55. It's fine. So what you're saying is that somewhere he is currently drafting crop circles for the aliens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Why not?
I think because it's silly.
Probably not that one. Yeah.
Actually, he'd be a high value one for the aliens.
Yeah, probably.
Because he has medical knowledge and stuff, you know, so it makes sense.
So he is now in charge of the probe program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's their lead scientist on medical humanoid research.
Yeah, he's on the bottom of the chain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
More seriously. The next theory is that he left to start a new life or otherwise take a break. I mean, I can
check out.
I can kind of see this one for one thing. No evidence of a crime has really ever been found. The police brought in crime scene experts and dogs to see if they could find blood or anything to suggest that Brian had been harmed or around the Ugly Tuna Saloon.
Yeah.
Didn't find anything.
Although, yeah, especially if he'd been murdered in the kitchen. The nice thing about murdering people in an industrial-type kitchen, a commercial kitchen,
mm-hmm.
you have to clean it every day anyhow, thoroughly. And so it's a great excuse to go, you know, whereas if
That's
I cleaned my kitchen, that would be suspicious.
Sure. Yeah. Well, if you cleaned anything, it would be suspicious. But, but one thing I will say is that in a kitchen at a pub, I mean, you know, at a place like the Ugly Tuna Saloon, not much blood, usually.
I don't
hanging
know how much
around
you
there.
Know, bloody beef they actually
no,
serve.
No, it's
there.
Free frozen food.
Probably. Well, even if it isn't, I mean, you know this about the meat that we get in America. It doesn't ever have actual blood in it. It has that thing that it secretes is something totally different. It's not actually blood. It's been drained of blood. So if there's blood in the kitchen, either a chef was real bad at doing his job and cut himself, or somebody was murdered there. Either way, there was no real evidence of that in or around the Ugly Tuna Saloon, as mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so in that respect, it does kind of speak to him just walking away.
And starting a new life.
Yeah. On the other hand, like we said, search dogs couldn't track him out of there, which seems like they would have been able to do had he just walked out on his own. Also, no activity on any of his bank accounts or his cell phone has been reported, nor did he take out cash.
But if he went off to start a new life, you know, of course he would have all new bank accounts and credit cards already set up.
Sure.
Yeah, in theory.
Theoretically, you
would think he would have cleaned out the bank accounts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
you
taken
would think
that with him.
Yeah. And apparently he wasn't really a cash guy. He didn't really carry cash with him, which is like most of people in our generation. So his ability to survive without accounts seems unlikely.
Yeah, you millennials, you flail with cash.
Yeah, it's
How
true.
How do you do it?
Plastic and Bitcoin. Mostly.
How many cryptocurrency
bitcoins all the way.
Yeah. How many bitcoins do you have in your wallet right now?
About 0.00005 of a bitcoin.
So you're practically a millionaire then.
Yeah.
I mean, they're worth a lot right now.
Oh, wait, no, wait. I have $1.
You have a dollar.
No, wait, $1 million. Yeah. One thing I'll mention here is that Alexis did make a habit of calling his phone a lot. I think she even said it herself. She just wanted to hear his voice, which I think is understandable.
Yeah.
She said that one time she called and it rang instead of going straight to voicemail. Singular, that's how old this case is. Brian's then cell phone provider said that it was a fluke. We've talked about this on the show before, that oftentimes a phone will return a ring while it's trying to connect.
Yeah, it doesn't always.
It's not actually ringing to the phone.
One of the things that I've wondered about with this is... how long did these calls that Alexis made to him? How long? Because I had heard it went on for like 6 months or more.
Yeah,
she was calling the phone.
Yeah.
So who was paying his phone bill?
I think his dad was paying him the entire time. I don't think he was paying for his own phone bill. That wasn't the impression I had, at least.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So somebody kept it, just hoping that he still had the phone on him or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I presume it was probably a family plan.
Yeah.
I was on my parents' family plan for a long time.
Yeah. She still is.
Well, especially when your kids are still in school. That's a way to ensure that they can always call. Well, but also to ensure they can always call you.
Yeah.
They don't have an excuse to not call you. But I would, you know, if my child went missing, I don't have any children, but if I could put myself in those boots, I would keep paying the plan if I had no idea where that kid was, dead or otherwise, just on the hope that maybe one day they'd turn it on and call me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally get that.
Yeah. Also, you'll see people suggest that Brian had traded clothes with someone and snuck out in someone else's clothes. But like we said, it was a good camera, and I think... it's not as though Brian was wearing crazy unique clothing, but it was a good enough camera that if somebody was wearing something that looked kind of like his, you would be able to see it. I don't know. I don't think a lot about that theory as a whole.
I know Brian could have actually had on a layer of clothes underneath his clothes that he had on. Take clothes off, stuff them in a wastebasket in the restroom. Walk back out with the new layer of clothes on, you know, and so I mean I could see that you don't need to trade clothes with somebody or have a co-conspirator.
It didn't really look like he was wearing enough clothes to be wearing something under it, but it's possible.
He could have had a T-shirt on underneath this other shirt, maybe.
I guess that's true.
So, So let me stop you because I can tell looking through the list here, this is the only theory that you have wherein he leaves under his own power. It appears that everything else is in some way, it's not so much. So
there actually is another theory out there where he leaves under his own power, but it's similar to this.
Okay. There are a couple other theories peppered in here where he might have left on his own power.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about this now while we're here. It'll help with the other theories later on.
Yeah.
As a younger man when drinking, I used to develop what I call drunk kleptomania, wherein I would see something like, let's just say, a ball cap and be like, oh, that's a nice hat. I'll take it. And put it on and walk away with it. I mean, it's not like I have a habit of stealing things. It just, it was like a fascination. And so I just kept it.
Mm-hmm.
He could have very easily picked up a hat or put on somebody's jacket and then wandered out there. And while that camera is good, from behind, if his clothing suddenly, you know, like just his, say, a jacket or a hat, he's now rendered not easily identifiable by that camera, maybe not identifiable. So he could have potentially just walked out of the bar on his own and not had what I'm seeing as kind of these nefarious theories down the line.
True. Don't you think a tracker dog would have been able to track him, though, still?
They didn't bring him until days after, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's, I mean...
And there's a lot of traffic.
That's fair.
There's enough time. I mean, bars have so many people coming in and
that's
out.
Fair. Plus also that floor that's like the bar floor and the floor in front of the escalator, probably below the escalator, probably was getting cleaned, mopped, vacuumed.
Because, you know, it was covered in Herc all the time.
Fair
and
enough.
Spilled drinks and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely
spring
fair.
Break weekend, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Or I could picture this. He meets a girl. They kind of hit it off. She's a little chilly, so he pulls off his shirt. He's still wearing a T-shirt and puts it over her, you know, so she's wearing his shirt, and they leave the bar together, you know.
But then what happens to him afterwards?
Then
I mean, you still have to explain all that.
She turns out to be like, you know, a sort of Black Widow serial killer.
Now, see, I've thought about this before. As I figured, well, either he walked outside, whether it's with another lady or by himself, and then this is where my he crawled into a dumpster idea came from, or because it is a crappy neighborhood, somebody said, hey, buddy, come here, and then beat the crap out of him and then dumped his body somewhere where he goes home with a girl and then the boyfriend shows up.
Let's just pause on that a second because we are going to talk about that.
That's the foul we play, but let's get to another fun theory that I heard on the internet where he left under his own volition. And this makes sense in that his mother had just died, and that is that the theory here is that Brian really wanted to be a woman. And so he goes into the bar and changes into, like, you know, women's clothing and leaves and starts his new life.
As Bette Midler?
Yeah, I guess, or as Brianna or something. And so
Brianna?
Yeah, Brianna. Yeah, but anyway, this is on, like, Reddit or something like that. I don't take it too seriously, but, you know, I mean, we owe it to our listeners to give them every loopy theory that's out there.
I don't think we owe it to them at all.
And apologies to Rihanna for Joe mispronouncing your name.
No, he was talking about Brianna, Brianna, the female version of Brian.
That's a real name.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the singer.
No, that's Rihanna, not Brianna.
No, but, okay, so more seriously, though, I do just want to say about this whole left to start a new life type theory that his disappearance really seems to, I mean, it really caused those in his life a lot of pain.
He just didn't seem like the kind of guy to do that.
You know, I mean, I know that's kind of a cop out thing to say. He just didn't seem like the kind of guy to do that. But his dad is just like heartbroken.
Oh, he was.
Even
he died,
more so was. Yeah. And Alexis and Brian's brother Derek and everybody who really cared about him was just so heartbroken that I don't think he would have walked away from all of that.
I feel kind of really sad for his younger brother because his mom died and then Brian disappears and then his dad was killed in a freak accident.
Total freak accident. Yeah.
Just 2 years later.
Yeah.
And so he's like an orphan, you know, his brother's gone, his parents are gone. His entire family's gone.
Yeah, they're all gone. In such a short amount of time.
In like 2 years time, they all die.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God.
It's really, I mean, so I don't think he would have done it.
He would have thought he would have come back for his dad's funeral anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah. So the next theory is an umbrella theory, is foul play.
So baseball?
Ducks. Wow. No, the first one here is random act. So this kind of feeds into what you were talking about, is that either in the bar or potentially out of the bar, he could have left via, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Met a girl, even though it seems like he was pretty serious with this other girl, but whatever.
Booze.
Booze, spring break.
Don't say that. Or for whatever reason, left undetected of his own volition, but then met some sort of foul play, got beat up, accidentally slept in a dumpster, got picked up, things like that. I don't see this one as much because there was no activity on his credit cards or his cell phone. So if somebody had beat him up or whatever, you would think they'd take his stuff and at least try to use it.
Yeah, maybe. But at the same time, it's like if you mean to mug a guy and you accidentally kill him.
Yeah.
And you realize you probably killed him. You might take his wallet, but then think, you know, we probably better not use his cards and stuff.
Because this town is covered in security cameras.
Right.
Yeah, and so I could totally see where you intended to just take his stuff and you unintentionally kill him.
Or, I mean, I guess I can even see, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, you mug him thinking, oh, I'll take all the cash this guy's got. You know, he's probably got some cash on him. He's got no cash. And you're like, God dang it.
He's got like $5.
Yeah. Dang it. All right. Well, never mind. I mean, if somebody mugged me, they'd get my credit cards and that's it. Cause I have literally zero, like not even a quarter in my wallet type of cash situation. So
I'm not allowed to have cash. It evaporates.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I stopped carrying cash, honestly, is cause it was spent money in my brain and I was just like, I can't do this anymore.
That's why I prefer cash over like credit cards, even though I have cards and I use them.
Mm-hmm.
They're very handy. I find I'm more mindful of the way I spend money if I'm using cash.
I use debit cards, so it's that.
Oh, I use my debit card a lot more than I use my credit card.
Nobody needs to know our financial situation.
But anyway, I do think it's conceivable that somebody did actually mug him and just not, you know, use the cards.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but I also think they did a really good job hiding the body.
Yeah, that's the thing I don't get either, is why they would bother, you know? They're criminals. Most criminals don't care about that kind of stuff. The longer you hang out with the body, as a matter of fact, the more likely you are to get busted with the body.
Yeah.
So if you just run away and leave it laying on the sidewalk,
that makes more sense. And it would have been we can reasonably assume that it would have been relatively close to citywide last call. So, you know, Friday before spring break, college town, last call. But there's going to be a lot of people on the street.
It was it was like a 20, 25 minute walk from the bar to his house?
No, yeah. I heard it was like 6 blocks to his house.
Oh, is that what? Okay.
That's what I heard,
Something gave me the impression that
it was close to campus.
Well, yeah. But I got the impression that it would have taken him some time. No, it said it would have run him through the not so nice neighborhoods.
Yes.
And so that's why he could have very easily disappeared if somebody assaults him. As Joe said, then realizes they killed him, drag him into the backyard, and then do whatever they do to
feed him to the pit bulls.
Sure. Yeah.
Apparently the bad, at least back in 2006, the bad neighborhood started like about a block away from the Yuggly Tuna.
That's the reason there were so many security cameras. It's probably actually the reason that there was the security guards.
Yeah, probably. Now that we've fleshed that out.
Yeah, that makes
dummies.
Sense.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess next. Are you guys ready to move on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's the next duck
theory? The next duck theory is that the roadies for the band might have been involved. I'm not totally sure what the motivation would have been here. It could have been, you know, but the only other unexplored lead really is that Brian was seen chatting with the band.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the band was like, we don't really want to talk to him. Roadies, can you take care of him? Maybe he was like touching all over their stuff. There's a number of things he could have been doing.
He threw up all over somebody's guitar.
Yeah. And I don't.
For hours. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a number of things that he could have done, you know, real or imagined, that might have kind of just ticked off a roadie or one of the band's
insulted
security,
the cover art.
Something.
I doubt. Yeah, typically bar bands don't have roadies. So they usually carry their own stuff.
Yeah,
they'll have the big dumb friend.
They usually
keeps people out of the van while they're loading.
Sometimes they do have that,
and that like drives.
And that is the important job.
Super important
because that person typically isn't drinking because, like Devin said, they're the one because the band is normally getting drinks.
Yeah. And also, you know, they got to like sleep for the next gig.
Well, that's if they're traveling.
Well,
man,
I don't know, but and I guess I don't really know, but you know, there's so many different things that I guess could have happened here,
but he
could have been injured or killed.
Leaving roadies aside, the band,
you know, somebody associated with the band. Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe it was like a total accident. Maybe he fell over the drum set and the cymbal just like crashed on his head and he was knocked unconscious and they were like, oh God, what do we do with this drunk guy?
Do we have insurance? No.
No.
Quick, put him in the snare.
Yeah. I mean, and so that is actually the theory, is that it's possible that his body was stuck into a case for something and then rolled out and put into the band van. But the thing is that then they would have to bring that case back in and put what actually belonged in there to take it back out. And it seems like assuming that camera, any of the cameras around where they were loading, and I assume they were loading through the back, but I don't actually know that for sure, was working. That is a big assumption that we have to make here. The police would have then, while they were reviewing all their surveillance tapes, seen these people like come with this like giant, you know, drum kit case and like go into their truck and like do some stuff and then come back out with the case. And they probably would have thought, we should talk to these people. Seems suspicious.
Yeah. Although, another theory that I heard is that, he went to chat with the band. They were breaking down at that time, getting ready to get out of there. And he was chatting. Wanted to talk about, you know, their guitars and all kinds of other stuff. And meantime, this guy's about to, you know, haul something heavy out of there. And Brian's like, hey, let me help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
So he helps the guy take it to the freight elevator. And they go down. They go out the back way. And that might be, he was just being with the band. He might have actually been helping this guy lug something. He was behind it when the camera goes off and everything.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get seen going out the back.
Yeah.
So he's actually helping these guys carry some heavy item out the back door. And once they're out there, the guy says, "Hey, dude, thanks. Hey, you want to go do a couple of lines in my van before we go back inside?"
I mean, it's
possible.
And then
Brian has a heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, from the blow.
I mean, this sort of thing is totally possible as well. Yeah.
Even if they're not doing lines, he leaves with the band for leave with the band to perform with, leave to go drink some more or whatever. Yeah.
I do tend to think with this case that the fact that he got out of there, that he got out of there without being seen by the cameras, and the fact that he disappeared, they're obviously related. I mean, they're not. There could be two really unusual things happening.
I don't think
so. The same guy in the
same
night.
Yeah, and one thing I will say is, as we're talking about these back doors, like I said, it's my understanding they were like rigged to go off with an alarm, but they were also probably the loading dock, probably. I don't know that for sure.
I've gone out to some of those doors that say an alarm will go off, and guess what doesn't go off?
Right, and then the other thing...
It's a silent alarm.
Yeah,
and then the other thing is that... I think I was reading through a Reddit thread on this or something like that, and some guy was a bartender, and he said, "Yeah, we have a back door that's rigged with a motion detecting camera, quote unquote, right? And we turned the sensitivity thing on that thing way down / off because every time a leaf blew past, it was going off, and we were like being alerted, and we just couldn't, or it was malfunctioning or whatever."
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's so much that could have gone wrong with that camera. But because we don't see anything, I've never seen in the reporting of this, you know, the police saying, "Also, we reviewed the tape from the back camera." They don't talk about the tape from the back camera at all, which leads everybody to believe that the back camera didn't ever
never
go
activated.
Off, right? Never activated. So there was no motion back there, when actually it could be, it was just turned off or wasn't working. Or whatever.
Or somebody had outsmarted it, a.k.a. put a piece of tape over it so that the band walking back and forth wedged the door open so the alarm doesn't go off.
Maybe the employees like to go smoke back there and they weren't supposed to take smoke breaks. I mean, honestly,
exactly.
There's so many things that could have happened to that back camera.
That's another thing, that a way you could have gotten out that way. Like you're talking about, you might have been talking to somebody who worked at the bar, so, you know, and they said, "Hey, you know, I don't have much time, but I do want to go smoke a cigarette. You want to go out back?" And once out there, they get jumped, or, you know, God knows what. Or maybe he got some secondhand smoke.
Oh, yeah. And killed it killed him.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because smoke kills. Secondhand smoke kills.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But I don't find it too perplexing, actually, that he got out of there without being spotted on camera, though, really.
I don't either. I mean, that's the thing with this case, is initially you were led to believe one way in, one way out, always surveilled. And the more I read, the more I decided that's actually not completely true. And there's a whole nest of ways that he could have exited the building unobserved.
Oh, yeah.
So Brian, briefly, was, you know, like we said, 6'2". He was also like 165 pounds, kind of normal build. So it is possible that he could have been helping with something. The next theory, I'm just going to move a little bit further through these, is that like a bouncer could have done something. You know, it's kind of the same theory of he could have had an altercation with a bouncer and they bounced him a little too hard. Though I don't know if they had bouncers, because they had the security guards right outside. And it's my understanding that the Ugly Tuna Saluna had a small restaurant component to it. It wasn't just like a bar. It was like a seafood bar and grill.
So the host/hostess station may have served as their age checker.
Or there's no age limit on the space. There's just age limit on getting booze. So the bartenders check your ID when you go up, and that's it. I've been to a number of places. In college towns, tends to not be that way. Tends to be a person sitting there checking
with
ID.
A stamp.
But it's usually like, that's also not necessarily a bouncer type person. It's just like a dude or a lady sitting on a stool, bored out of their mind, checking IDs.
And sometimes those guys too, that they'll deliberately hire a guy who's a big guy,
intimidating,
but who's not actually trained in martial arts. He's not actually mean or going to brutalize anybody.
Yeah,
but it's just that,
or
he's
maybe
a big
not that
guy,
strong.
And
he's
so
just got a transfer tattoo thing on his neck to make him look mean.
Those tattoo sleeves.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, but this is a theory you'll see floated around. Is that
it doesn't look to me like, looking at the pictures and the videos and stuff, like, it doesn't look like the kind of bar that really needs, you know, really.
No. And there's those
bouncers,
two security guards right outside. Yeah. So if something does happen, they can come out. And, you know, the other thing is that I've never seen anything about Brian being a particularly violent or angry drunk.
Some people can be just obnoxious drunks.
Maybe, yeah.
Which can get you beat
but
up,
he
maybe.
Certainly doesn't look violent or angry or really that obnoxious on the tape at 1:55 a.m. And that tape is literally like 5 or 10 minutes before his friends and everyone left.
And by the way, we need to point out, so at that point at 1:55, he's seen outside the bar talking to two ladies, and they are eventually identified and interviewed. So it's not as if he went home with them or he was being harassing to them.
Yeah.
He just chatted with them standing outside. Like there was nothing untoward.
And they
reported
it was a fine interaction.
Yeah.
It wasn't, amazing, but it wasn't like awful. It was
talking
to a drunk dude. Yeah. And it didn't seem like his mood was in a weird spot or anything like that. So, it just seems like 5 or 10 minutes is pretty quick for it to have been a very secret weird altercation,
yeah.
It's one thing if somebody said, oh yeah, and there was this huge fight in the bar, we don't really know what was going on, but there was some big altercation and they dragged the guy out,
to 1 minute escalation followed by body whisked away.
Yeah,
that's a little more phenomenal.
Yeah, it just seems really quick and unlikely.
A lot of witnesses there. I think that if there was an altercation, it happened outside after he got out, in the back. Yeah,
I would guess that as well. And then the last theory that we have, if you guys are ready, is that it could have been an accident. He could have drunkenly left via the construction site, as Joe kind of mentioned,
that
were somehow unlocked and fallen into a hole or a wall and been accidentally covered up.
Yeah, they pour concrete over the top of them.
Yeah, it seems like you would see a body in there, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
It's not
as though it was like this giant pit, where he could have been kind of covered with dirt and nobody was really looking, and it was just like, all right, back the concrete truck up. This was a pretty small space.
I don't believe that's the way those things work.
I don't either.
I think they actually look in there to make sure the crap hasn't fallen into
usually,
the hole.
Usually, I would think, yep.
Yeah.
But
people throw trash in holes.
Yeah.
Or people do fall in them.
Yeah.
You know?
So I see this a lot on the internet, like a lot.
And it just doesn't necessarily compute.
To me, it would have to be like somebody intentionally put his body in a wall or hole and intentionally covered it up.
Yeah.
And then the construction crew came in the morning and they were like, oh, Bob must have put the drywall up before he left last night. Weird. Yeah. Okay, well, let's keep going.
Well, it definitely couldn't have been in the wall, in the drywall, because the smell would have been apparent rather quickly.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, though, is we don't know. So none of us are still here clear on exactly where this construction is. But if he were to have been in the bottom of a hole, there has to be a pile of dirt that is used to at least partially cover his body up. And the thing to remember, a lot of times with holes like that, when they're going to pour concrete in them, do you know what they do to them?
They
pull the dirt out?
They pack them.
They compact it.
They pack them so that it doesn't settle. So if suddenly you look in there and there's all this nice, loose, soft dirt, you're saying, oh, Billy, damn it, I told you to pack it. You're going to get in there to take care of that, and you're going to find the body, scant inches below.
So, and that's what I mean is that if somebody had intentionally hidden his body in the construction site, that's one thing. But all of these kind of speculations on the internet of people saying, well, he just walked into the construction site and accidentally fell into something, that's just total bunk to me.
Yeah, no. Even drunk, I don't think, Brian was a bright guy. I don't think he was that stupid.
No.
To what? Walk into a construction site?
To walk into a construction site and fall into a hole or something like that.
I've drunkenly wandered into construction sites, and I'm very lucky that I didn't fall into a couple
of holes. Well, Steve, here's the thing is, we did say that Brian was very bright.
Oh, you're right. I'm not. You're right.
So.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, though, I have wandered through places, because you're just like, woo, when you're drunk. You just
maybe
don't
this
think
is
about
a
it.
Fast way out.
This is curious.
Yeah. I agree, but even so, I think they would have found his body.
Yeah.
There's one other, accident theory that is that Brian could have drunkenly fallen into the river and been whisked.
Oh, is this
down.
The smiley face?
It's not the smiley face, but every once in a while people lump him into the smiley face murderers.
But then there's another theory that it's not related to smiley face, but he still fell into the river
and was then...
Although,
washed down river?
My understanding is that the river that goes through Columbus is like the closest it approaches where he was is about a mile.
Yeah,
something
he
like
would
that.
Have been really far away.
Yeah.
And so, really lost.
Yeah.
Which is typical of all of these other smiley faces.
Well, true. But there's also somebody posted a thing on Reddit, apparently it's from Columbus, who said basically the river, where it flows through town, it's been dammed to bring the level up. And so it's really kind of more like a reservoir than a flowing river.
Yeah. Oh, it's nice and slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice and slow. They said that if you've fallen in, and they occasionally drain it for various reasons. And so you can see all the crap that's on the bottom.
Yeah.
So his body would have been found.
Well, they did find so they did a really extensive search of the river / reservoir situation.
Yeah.
And they did find actually a skeleton at one point a year later. And they thought it might be Brian, but it was not.
What's that? What country is it that has all the locks and waterways through the city in Europe?
A bunch of them.
Amsterdam.
Do.
Oh, it might be Amsterdam. One of those. They recently drained a whole bunch of it because they had to do massive repairs, and you got to see 50 years worth of stuff that people like. There was bicycles and motorcycles, but then they were finding cars that had been there for 40 years, but the water was cold enough that they hadn't really rusted away. Ooh. It was actually amazingly interesting, the imagery of it. So I could just imagine what it's like when they're draining this one in Ohio. It's like, nothing but beer bottles and some corn husks.
Weird.
You know, there used to be a boat ramp. It's still there, but it's blocked off now. But down right by the Selwood Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a boat ramp there.
Yeah.
And they blocked it off with a concrete barrier. But before they did that, apparently that was the place to go.
To
push your car into the river. So there were a lot of cars down
there.
That's
crazy.
I mean, yeah, they've since pulled them out. They pulled a lot of cars. But people would go shove their car in there and then report it stolen and collect the insurance when they were tired of their car or whatever.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, hey, that's a good way to get your money out of it.
But again, back to Brian, though, I am totally sure he did not fall into the river.
No, I agree.
He maybe fell face first drunkenly into a mud puddle and drowned.
Unlikely.
Came along and threw him in a dumpster.
Yeah,
I find the dumpster theory, even though it's implausible itself, to be more plausible than
any of the other
falling
ones.
Falling into the construction site and being buried in concrete.
I think just overall, the reason that this is such a popular case is because there's not a single theory out there that really satisfies me in terms of what I could believe.
This is a failing on all of our parts, is that we all want the theory that nicely buttons it up and tells us what happened.
Yeah.
And I actually think that this story is, it's kind of like the hourglass that you sit on the side, is that it all kind of narrows down. But if we just accept that he got out of the building without us seeing him on film, then it expands right back out. And then everything could have happened to this guy. He could be anywhere in town, and that's where it becomes unsolvable, because now the police don't know where to look, because you have a city that's square mile upon square mile and thousands upon thousands of people, homes, basements, parks, trash bins. I mean, you could be anywhere at that point.
And there's no real clues to give any to really make you want to favor one over the other.
Yeah.
I like the idea of he meets a serial killer, the serial killer being a clever Hannibal Lecter kind of guy, has already spotted the cameras and figured out a way to lure Brian outside without being seen with him, and then murders him, gets rid of the body.
Buries him under his house, John Wayne Gacy style.
Yeah, I mean, that's really it, though, right?
That's really about the best theory I can come up with. It's absolutely unsupported, you know.
I just think none of them are good.
Yeah, no, there's no good evidence out there.
Slam dunk theory here.
Yeah.
I think that when his friend Clint finally decides to share what he knows, if he even knows anything.
I just don't think that he does.
Yeah,
I think he's just trying to protect himself, because, like, I would too.
The court of public opinion was going to, you could tell. Yeah. I think he could see very early on he's going to get ripped to shreds.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And said, no, I'm giving you all the finger. I didn't do anything wrong, because everybody gets mad at him because he wouldn't take a lie detector test.
Yeah.
Lie detector tests are so fallible.
Yeah, that
they're worthless, so that doesn't prove squat against him.
Yeah,
but I would like to hear if he's got anything useful to say. I had heard that he, through his lawyer, said that he would testify or you know, he would give information to police or private investigators or whoever.
Well, and I believe he did.
If he got a grant of immunity.
Well, I thought he told them everything he knew about that night, so I don't know what else more he's going to be sharing.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he was cooperative.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Who knows? I know. And the problem is, again, you know, as we've said many times in the past, it's a minefield when you talk to the police.
Yeah.
You can wind up incriminating yourself without even meaning to, even if you're innocent.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, enough of that. Forget it. I can't think of a thing.
Yeah. Great.
No, just kidding.
I was just going to say, I think that pretty much sums up the story
in
this episode.
Yeah. Too bad. Guy disappeared and
we'll probably never hear from him again.
If
you are Clint and you want to talk to us about, you know, we won't accuse you.
We will grant you immunity
from the Thinking Sideways Tribunal.
Yep.
So if you want to talk to us, or if you're not Clint and you just want to talk to us, you can send us an email. That email address is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. You probably know where you are getting your podcasts, be that iTunes or Stitcher Premium or
Google,
anywhere else. If you've just found us, please do subscribe and leave a comment and a rating. We do appreciate those. If you haven't already, please do consider Stitcher Premium.
You get the episode early.
You get it 4 days early and ad-free and also some bonus content.
Ooh, great bonus content.
So go to stitcher.com/thinkingsideways and use the promo code SIDEWAYS to get that. There's some deal stuff going on.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is not very helpful. Anyway, if you want to see any of our linked research, you can do that on our website, where you can also find the links to buy t-shirts and an episode list and all that stuff. That is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, where we've got a page and a group. Like the page, join the group, answer the questions. It's Yes and Thursdays.
It's easy.
Super easy. You can find us on Twitter, where we are Thinking Sideways. You can find us on Instagram, where we are Thinking Sideways Podcast. And you can find us on Reddit, where our subreddit is rthinkingsideways. All of that having been said, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here. We'll talk to you next week.
Ta-ta, everybody.
Happy spring break!
Oh,
it's not, is it?
No.
It's coming up pretty soon.
Actually, maybe it is.
It's coming up soon.
I've lost track of time.
Okay, bye, guys.
Dudes.